It's Colorado Matters from CPR News. I'm Ryan Warner. Imad Shaheen could be hanged if he goes home. He's one of more than 100 people sentenced to death recently in Egypt. Several of these mass sentences have been handed out since the summer of 2013, when the military ousted Mohamed Morsi. He was the first democratically elected president in Egypt's history and was also sentenced to death in this latest round. Imad Shaheen fled Egypt early last year, fearing he'd be targeted. He's a visiting professor of political science at Georgetown University, but was in Denver last week as a visiting scholar at DU's Center for Middle East Studies. CPR's Andrea Dukakis asked him how he reacted to learning he'd been sentenced to death.
It was a mixed reaction. On the one hand, of course, it did not come as a surprise from a regime that has been extremely repressive and has been applying a reign of terror against any voice of dissent in Cairo, in Egypt, and has been actually using the courts and the judicial system as a tool to settle accounts and suppress dissidents. However, on the other hand, of course, I felt it was excessive.
This was a conviction along with 100 other people.
Right.
What were you convicted of?
The charges, which I really described them as fabricated and sham charges, were of grand espionage. They call it grand espionage. And belonging to, you know, a legal organization and all this kind of stuff. I mean, so... However, most of these charges, or all of these charges, have not been specified in terms of the specific action that, or crimes that I have committed, and without any substantive evidence.
And there's one part of the conviction that I believe says you were CC'd on emails with others that are accused as part of a bid to undermine Egypt's national security by having contact with Hamas and Iran. Explain
that. It's the memorandum that you're referring to is actually has nothing to do with Iran or Hamas, and I have nothing to do with Iran or Hamas. Someone asked for my assessment as a political scientist of the crisis that Egypt was going through. That was October, November 2011. There was a major confrontation between the what we call the SCAF, the Supreme Council for the Armed Forces, and political figures and political forces in the country. They asked me for an assessment, how to get out of this crisis. And this is exactly what the memo dealt with. And basically it was, you know, to commit to peaceful means for change, not to make any deals with the military establishment, and to uphold the demands of the revolution. That's exactly what the memo was all about.
You've been in this country for a year and a half. Will you return to Egypt to appeal it?
Under these circumstances where there is no respect for due process and the minimum requirements of justice, I think I would be doomed if I did this. This is like a suicide. Either the sentence will be confirmed or it will be commuted to lesser sentence, which is life in prison or 15 years in prison. So it's a lose-lose situation in this case.
So I imagine you plan to stay in the United States indefinitely at this point.
As long as this regime is in power, I think I'm here in, I have an advantage compared to others to speak out about against this regime. And this is what I intend to do, and I will continue doing, to expose their atrocities and also the fascist nature of that regime, military regime, and also to advocate democracy, rule of law, and human rights in Egypt.
And I imagine part of your effort was this Atlantic article you wrote last week. You wrote that in January 2014, troops showed up at your house and your wife was really frightened and you bought a plane ticket the next day. I'm wondering how your family is now and if they're in any jeopardy.
My family is safe, thank God. Of course, this ordeal has not been easy until actually we managed to all become again together.
In that article, you use an example of another person who was sentenced to death along with you. He's been in jail in Israel since 1996. Why do you think you fell into this group of, say, 100-plus people that received this death sentence?
There are a number of reasons for this. One, of course, that from the beginning of this coup, I was an outspoken critic of the coup itself. I called that coup a coup. And if you recall, for example, the United States refused to call this a coup. So I called it a military coup and a bloody one from day one because of the repressive measures that they took against peaceful protesters. And if you look, since then, of course, there has been a lot of irregularities and extra legal measures that have been taken. So this is exactly what I'm trying to point out, to that this is a regime that has been extremely repressive And that's what I, when I said it's a reign of terror, it's indeed a reign of terror that they are have been engulfing Egypt in.
Why do you think the regime in Egypt is handing down these sentences now?
I think it's trying to send strong messages. And I can at least identify three messages. One, of course, to the Egyptian people themselves, that it is becoming extremely risky to oppose or to express dissent to the extent that can lead to the death sentence. The second one, of course, is to use this as a bargaining chip. The regime knows that there is a lot of resentment about the atrocity that has been committing. So if, for example, it pretends that yielding to pressure and commute these sentences from death to life in prison, for example, or pardon some people, so that's a win-win situation for them. They appear as if they have yielded, and at the same time, they will ask for reward from the international community for their cooperation. And finally, of course, is the it's a message to the West, very strong message to the Western policymakers to test the limit of tolerance of how much they can accommodate this regime and its atrocities.
What do these sentences like yours mean for democracy building in Egypt?
In terms of democracy, of course, I think this would raise, and I hope it raises, a lot of resentment against the irrationality of that regime, because this cannot be rational. And this has to be stopped. Many Western countries, especially the United States and the Europeans, think that Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, the current president or current military general who's ruling Egypt, they think that they can accommodate him and they can appease him. But I'm saying that this is a wrong strategy, this is a wrong policy, because actually appeasement would lead him to commit more violence and more atrocities against Egyptians. But I think he needs to be stopped as soon as possible.
So clearly you don't think the U.S. and other Western countries are doing enough to stop what's going on right now?
They have been expressing grave concern, and they have been falling short even of condemnation. And even concern and condemnation are not good enough. This has to be translated into concrete policies. Policies that do not reward military generals, policies that do not reward military coups against democratic elected presidents.
Let's talk about recent history in Egypt. The country seemed to be really hopeful after the fall of Mubarak, but you say in 2013, Egypt was the last in the world rankings for the quality of its primary education and ranks as one of the worst in the world for corruption and the ease of doing business there. Will things continue to slide on this kind of path?
Yes. Look, the two possible avenues that General Sisi can take are to reconstitute the political process, the political system, in an inclusive way. And the second one is to achieve economic recovery, the indicators that you're talking about. And he's not doing well on both levels. He still insists on an exclusionary policies and tactics, even eradicationist strategies against his opponents. And on the other hand, he is not trying to build or achieve economic recovery based on durable or sustainable economic driving forces like the private sector or the public sector. He's trying to rely on the military establishment to achieve the economic recovery, economic progress, thus turning the military into an economic broker, and also on regional Gulf money, Gulf states money, in order to achieve some kind of an economic growth, which cannot be sustainable. Because, you know, in order to achieve economic growth, that has to be an integrative process that relies on your domestic resources.
And how do you get to that point? What is the
national reconciliation?
What does an ideal Egypt look like to you?
National reconciliation. We need to bring all these people, you know, because he has been following a policy of polarization, escalation, and violence in order to justify the violence against opponents that's taking place.
And how do you get to the point where you have a democratically elected leader?
That usually takes time. We were there. But unfortunately, many people were not patient enough to at least allow some kind of trial and error mistakes. All democracies make mistakes. But an imperfect democracy is always better than what seems to be a stable dictatorship. We will get there someday.